ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The final episode of the original TV series of The Brady Bunch went to air in the United States 50 years ago last month, on March the 8th, 1974. And that should have been that. It was a fairly standard situation comedy of the time about a blended family of two parents, six children, a housekeeper, and a dog named Tiger. But going off the air was just the beginning, because 3 years later came the Brady Bunch Variety Hour, later a cartoon series, TV movies, a drama series, stage productions, even a renovation show, which served as a reunion as the six kids got back together to construct an authentic replica of their original house. Even though there was no actual house, back when the first series was being filmed, it was just a set. The latest part of the Brady Bunch story is that podcast, The Real Brady Bros, with two of the stars of the Brady Bunch, Greg and Peter, Barry Williams and Chris Knight, and it is a pleasure to have them on the program. Barry and Chris, welcome to Overnights.
Thank you very much.
Tell me, there's always been a great love for the Bradys in Australia. What are your connections to our country, Chris?
Well, I mean, I discovered, I think for real, that escaping Brady was impossible when I first went to Australia. I was in the high-tech industry and not realizing, just how. I did know the Brady Bunch ran in Australia, but I hadn't a clue as to how popular it had become. And I was looking forward to being away from recognition. This was, I don't know, early 80s. I didn't get through customs without getting recognized. And I happened to be there coincidentally the weekend. And I was only there for 4 days. I was there the weekend of the premiere of the real live Brady Bunch. And I was invited to it, and I had been invited to it in the past as it passed through Los Angeles, and I opted not to go. But then it followed me to Australia, and I decided that somebody greater than I was speaking to me in some way, and that I perhaps needed to see it there in Australia. And it was then that I probably found my peace with the Brady Bunch and recognized its importance. I mean, these were some years after it was canceled, 20 years after it was canceled. And I'm being embraced by all these wonderful Australians who I didn't know. I was halfway, around the globe and recognized, and I felt comforted by that. There's something very powerful in that for me. And it was from that point on that I recognized what I needed to do is just support the love that this show engenders. I mean, why not?
You were embraced by many people, my sister included, Chris. She kissed you at the real live Brady Bunch, and she talks about that to this day. She kissed Davy Jones. She kissed Christopher Knight. She's very excited about that.
Rod, this is Barry again, yes. And now I feel completely left out. Would you have your sister come to America so we can get this taken care of?
Barry, tell me about your connection with Australia.
Well, I love to travel, and there are times when you come to a place and you just resonate with the energy, with the people, with the attitudes, and I found Australia to be absolutely delightful, very positive, very friendly, very open, warm, welcoming. And I was fortunate to come and tour. I have had a live show, a musical show that I was touring, and so I saw many, many parts of Australia, including where you are now, and I took it full advantage of it. So I got to walk on the bridge and went to the Opera House and down to Bondi. And also, I'm a surfer, so anything that has to do with the ocean and water and that, I really, really, really enjoyed. And I've been back several times, and I am looking for an opportunity to come again.
Always welcome. Always welcome. I saw Florence as well in concert. Tell me, Florence had a huge impact on you, not only because Florence Henderson, because you're on the Brady Bunch together, but what did she tell you about how you should treat fans and how you should act as an actor?
I think all of us would agree that Florence was as much as a good friend and a maternal figure. She was a mentor for us. And we, you know, were navigating some pretty deep waters for a bit, growing up, maturing, you know, going through, you know, our bodies were changing and our understanding of the world was changing. And we didn't know really, we're not prepared to deal with recognition on a large scale. And we watched Florence. I watched Florence and how gracious she was with fans and people that would come up sometimes and interrupt her. And we had talks about this, and she helped form a great perspective of how important they are in our lives, and to also to pay attention to what the fans' experience of our show was. So oftentimes when I'm meeting new people, I like to listen and hear and let them share what, you know, oh, well, I was in high school and I'd rush home from right after, or my parents used to discipline me by not allowing me to watch episodes if I misbehaved. So I always behaved. And that was something that Florence took our attention to. I learned from and has added a great, great depth to my experience.
Chris?
If I might. Sure. Yeah, that she's a great example of the power of a role model, good or bad. I mean, before I even knew that I was absorbing her behavior or wanting to, or consciously, her behavior had an effect on us, on me. You know, so much so that it's like you want to be like them as much as you can be. You also, I remember this very strongly, not wanting to disappoint Florence. And frankly, not wanting to disappoint anyone in the family, but especially Florence and Bob. And it was interesting between the two, the one that was more threatening that you could more easily disappoint was Florence. I mean, she had a strength about her, and it was all about doing the right thing. And then later, as you know, I'm a young adult, she's commenting on these things about treating your fans. And what she's commenting on in her instruction to us was simply why I observed. I mean, she did what she said toward her fans. She was always gracious with a smile, had time, and was always aware of how lucky she was to have them.
Rod, if I may, I'd like to add a perspective of just what Florence Henderson was handling and juggling in her life throughout the run of our show. She came out of New York where she has a family. So not just was she the Brady Bunch's and television's favorite mom, but she has four children of her own, young children that she was raising at that time. She was at first commuting from New York to Los Angeles to film. Then she moved, she and her husband moved the family out to Los Angeles, which simplified that. But now she's taking care of her own four kids and all of us, and being a professional and doing our shows and doing concert tours as well. Well, she was a very dedicated professional, wonderful human who had a lot on her plate.
When I spoke to her, and I'm sorry to have to bring this up, she told me about when Bob Reed got sick, and that he asked her to tell you about it. What do you remember about that?
You know, we were his family, you know, in every real respect. You know, she brought the news, seemed natural, obviously sad.
I actually received a call from Bob, and he wanted to tell me that he was not well. But in typical Robert Reed fashion, he underplayed it to the point that I appreciated the call, because we didn't speak, you know, on the phone often, but I didn't grasp the gravity of the call until I spoke with Florence, and she helped me to understand kind of what was going on and that it most likely would be terminal. And I was grateful for that, because then I could kind of handle the relationship going forward. And I was out busy touring and running around the country too, but I was able to stay in touch through phone and got to speak with him, well, just days before he passed.
One of the most beautiful things I think about Robert Reed was, famously, he wasn't in the final episode of The Brady Bunch because he thought it was terrible. But he came back for the variety show, and when the Brady girls got married and there was some possibility maybe he wouldn't be in it, he said, no one's giving away those girls except for me. And I just thought that was incredible. Tell me about Robert Reed.
It's interesting because lots been said about the differences that he had with Sherwood. But the amount of care and comfort that he provided us, and we and Barry and I watch it weekly as we review these episodes. His performance is kind of why the show works, to have him as rock-like, as a central figure, giving whatever gravity there was in the show to the family. It's just remarkable. He was that warm to us. I mean, I frankly didn't see the warning that was kept from us kids. I would imagine I can understand Bob's frustration with some of that, which he was frustrated with, because as an adult, I probably would have had the same ideas that he was having, not dealing with them the way that he had or that I heard that he had. But the reality is, for me, he was just this warm, gracious father figure who treated us like family.
I think also we played as the kids at a very, very significant role in his life. Divorced, he has a daughter, but they were living in the Midwest. So he was here. He lived alone with his parents for a while. They passed. So we became probably the most central family figures in his life, the most consistent. He saw us the most. And through both the Brady Bunch, and then through the variety show, and then through the specials that we went through, and then the recurring series. So he had this great connection and affinity for us. And so when he said, you know, no one's going to give those girls away but me, that was very consistent with who he was and what the relationship with us was.
The other adult in the show was Anne B. Davis as Alice. Now, listening to your podcast, it's really changed my mind about her role on the show. She was the heart of the show, it seems. Is that right?
Of the comedy. Yeah. She was definitely the heart of the comedy. You can see this, and this is one of the great advantages that Chris and I have and enjoy with our podcast, which, you know, really by definition would be episodic recap. So we're looking at one episode per podcast and then dissecting it and looking at it and understanding its structure, its language, where we were, the memories, and which – interestingly, our memories oftentimes are quite different because of our age difference when we were going through this common experience. And one of the things that both Chris and I noticed, that if the writers needed a transition, if we needed to get out of a scene or get into another one, or button up the scene that we were in, they wanted to go out with a laugh. And sometimes, even if Anne B. Davis wasn't in the scene and they wanted to get out of, she would come in and make the joke and then they could move on.
Yeah.
And that kind of became a part of the structure of our show, that she would be the comic relief of maybe a dramatic issue that one of the kids was going through. And she could somehow, you know, make it all right, or throw some light on it. And we just think it, and she's so good at it. It cracks us up.
We've learned when the show was being purchased by Paramount, or optioned by Paramount, the network recognized this is a comedy and there's no comics in it. And the role of Alice was the one role that they could place a person that had a history of successful comedy performances in. So essentially she was the target of the joke. And sometimes the jokes were to end a scene and sort of hung obviously out of sync with the scene, because the rest of the show wasn't necessarily, you know, given to uproarious laughter, but the network found that it was more comfortable for them to have a laugh track at that moment to exit a scene, and Anne B would then be the person to deliver it. She could be trusted.
Right. So you had Forrest Henderson, who came from Broadway, and Robert Reed, who came from a very dramatic legal show, The Defenders, and the rest of us were kids. So Anne B. Davis was not only experienced with situation comedies from Love That Bob and the Bob Cummings Show.
She was an Emmy Award winner.
Chelsea, she was an Emmy Award, I think multiple Emmy Awards. And she was another one to learn from. Now, Anne Davis, there's some interesting things about her. One is she doesn't know how to cook.
And yet she spent most of her time in the kitchen stirring some sort of pot.
Most of the time, which is ironic. Another is she's no nonsense. I mean, she
that
she
comes
kept
across
a tight leash on us, and rehearsals and waiting for, you know, the lights to be set and cameras to roll was not the time to be messing around. And she made that very clear. She wasn't going to tolerate it. Mm-hmm. So we always came prepared. And the other thing, she didn't have a natural affinity for children in the first place. She just, you know, she didn't have kids of her own. And so to be friends with Annie, you had to earn her respect. You had to earn her friendship, which, you know, ultimately I think we all did in our own way. She was a joy to watch and learn from, as well as befriend.
Chris?
For her, comedy was a serious business. We approached it a little differently as children, you know, not understanding the seriousness of it all necessarily. And that could, you know, that could at times rub her the wrong way when we would all let our energies intermingle and get out of hand. So we'd be pulled back down by Florence. She was around. And or you would just feel it, you know. And she was right there with the comedy when it was there, you know, when it was necessary. Mm. It's on her and it was off. And but as Barry said, she had a craft. And we were influenced by that. We learned by her example.
Chris Knight and Barry Williams are our guests from not only the Brady Bunch, but the Real Brady Bros, their podcast, which I love the fact that it doesn't just start with episode one and end with episode 117, that it just chooses at random, it seems, from various seasons and various episodes, because you want to be able to hear different things rather than just follow it through from the start to the finish. It's 50 years. How much do you actually remember about what happened?
Well, it varies. What we have discovered is that if we were featured in an episode, we tend to have logged more memories than ones that we just kind of showed up for incidentally or as a part of the subplot. And some of the episodes, neither Chris nor I had really ever seen, with the exception of when I wrote Growing Up Brady's, I had to go back and look at all the episodes in the late 90s. But they didn't stick because now we're taking time to really look at and flesh out and listen to and share about. So most of it is jogged memory from watching it in a timely fashion before we sit down to do the podcast, so that things are fresh. And then we remind each other, we can play off of each other and remind each other, oh, what about this? What about that? And it kind of brings it all back to life, but now with an adult perspective.
Chris, your wife, you know, never watched The Brady Bunch, and you've been watching it with her. What does she think about it, and what are your thoughts now about it?
Yeah, she watched The Golden Girls. I don't know where she was as a child. And maybe
she
that's
wasn't
what you
born,
mean.
Chris.
As a child, she watched The Golden Girls. What's that?
She wasn't born.
She wasn't born when we were on the air.
Well, no,
originally.
It's always been in the cycle somewhere, being rerun. She opted for something quite a bit more adult as a child. She thinks it's interesting. So the family rings true to her, except for her comedy is a little bit, her sense of comedy having been formed around something like The Golden Girls, a little more sophisticated, a little older. But she gets it now watching it. She sees the simplicity of it, perhaps that Cindy is used as a foil a little too often to dispatch information that no one is supposed to know. These are simple devices. And, you know, Barry and I are tickled now watching them. There's two different types of actors out there. Barry and I think are similar in that, Barry lies somewhere in the middle. I do not like watching my work.
But it's like watching somebody else, surely.
Well, eventually. Now it is. Doing what we're doing by doing our podcast and reviewing it is possible now because it's so long ago that it's not as though it's me. It's a cousin of me. It's sort of I was there and I remember in part the experience, but it's not watching and picking apart every little thing that I'm doing. I'm not driven to just watching me. And like Barry would watch dailies. It would not be a positive experience for me or my work. Dailies are traditionally the next day after the film has been printed from the day before's work at lunch. It is screened for the director and the producer and some of the actors so that they can see what they did the day before and perhaps adjust from it. I'd rather not work that way. I'd rather have someone direct me. We just discovered in an episode we just recently did with Eve that she doesn't watch the episode still, even if it's 50 years ago, because it's still close to home.
We have guests on our podcast. So we've had Michael Lookinland on it. We've had Susan Olson. We've had Lloyd Schwartz, who is a producer and also the son of the creator, Sherwood Schwartz. We've had Eve Plum on a couple of times. And Eve is the only one who didn't watch the episode that was about her before we did the podcast. Going through the podcast, we started to recount and discuss the plot points, and then we'd have to ask her what she thought about it, what she recalled about it, because she hadn't seen it ever. So
unbelievable.
It was really
I'm glad you mentioned that. I wanted to bring that up, that you've had all of them on and others. Maureen McCormick so far has not appeared as a guest on The Real Brady Bros. Is there a reason why, and can we expect that at some point?
We hope you could expect that at some point. We'll just throw that out there.
Maureen has a relationship with the Brady Bunch, and there are things that she wants to participate in, things that she doesn't. Frankly, we have not yet invited her. We're waiting a little bit. We wanted to get some experience. Time has gotten away. We've done some 90 episodes now, and yes, we will invite her and would love to have her on. She has a lot to contribute. At the same time, we want to be respectful of her not feeling we're going to be taking advantage of her in any way or exploiting her. And so we just haven't gotten around to making a formal invitation yet. But yes, we will. And I'm sure you can count on it. And usually she does. Same thing happened in her participation in Growing Up Brady, my book. For a while, she was not comfortable with the idea until I assured her that it was a positive look back and it was only going to cover that period of time. And I wanted to have some memories and questions. And then she did. So she hasn't yet, but we have not sent out a formal invitation as yet.
As I mentioned, it's not just the Brady Bunch, but there were many varieties of Brady Bunch after that. Variety show, drama series, that sort of thing. There was in one show a different Cindy. There was in one show a different Jan. In one there was a different Marsha. How do you feel that? Are they real Bradys? Would you have them on the show?
Yes, absolutely. We've had Robbie Rist on, who is Cousin Oliver. And yes, we would have others.
Jennifer Runyon, Lee Ayers.
Mm-hmm. Jerry Rochelle.
Jerry. Mm-hmm.
That is something that actually we're currently discussing.
I'm pleased to hear that, because they've got a different Brady story to tell, don't they?
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Jerry Rochelle one is because we haven't yet decided. We're just doing the original show at this point. There is reason to do the variety show. The audience out there is not the one that's listening to it, the one that watched the original Brady Bunch is not necessarily the same audience that watched the variety show. So we're careful about wanting to just tread off onto that unless it's over, you know, sort of a special contained series.
When we're through with the Real Brady Bros as an episodic recap of the original 5 years, we're going to take a look and see, okay, do we want to continue on with the reunions and begin to explore the variety show, begin to explore the cartoon show? Is there interest in that? And certainly if we did, we would want to include all the new characters because, they have this, as you say, a different story and a different perspective of joining a family that was already established publicly.
So why was it that you always came back? I know for various reasons, Eve or Susan or Maureen couldn't make it for those various shows. I understand that. But you were always there, you and Mike Lookinland, who played Bobby. You always were there. Why was that?
It's coincidental that it happens to be all the guys. It's just that there was no reason not to. For the feeling that this show provided me, and the sense of place that I have amongst them, I would feel lost in letting them replace me. You know, it's my seat at the table. I'll take it. It's just pleasing to work together.
Barry?
Never been a question for me. Acting and everything that comes around it, in my case, the theater and music, et cetera, have always been where I live professionally, and I loved it. A Brady Bunch is another one of those vehicles, and I have a great affection for our cast and and feel I have an important role in that show. And as Chris said, I've never been trying to escape the Brady Bunch. If there was a good idea and a network and there's interest in it and a script that I thought I could contribute to, I wouldn't think of letting another actor step in to that role. The only time that they did was with the movies, at least, I appeared in the movies, which was a fun yeah. way to join that production. But the movies were commenting on the Brady Bunch, and the Brady Bunch reunions were the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, at a time when we were younger, we were no longer equipped to play that age, our role. So we yeah. are not in play to play ourselves.
Chris, on a very recent podcast, you expressed surprise that there was a compilation album, the best of It's a Sunshine Day. You released four albums. Chris, you in fact released that fifth album with Maureen McCormick, and a lot of those songs are on the CD releases of the Brady Bunch albums. I know, Chris, you're famously on the podcast talk about how much you hated singing, which makes me ask you why you came back for the Variety Hour, knowing that it was an hour of singing and dancing.
Yes, legendarily at odds with music. And then the Variety Show comes around. I did the Variety Show for similar reasons. Well, let's just say I also last year with Barry and Mike did The Masked Singer,
yes.
which I had to chuckle at when it came to me, because it's not something I want to do. And it seems music is always being offered. But if it's an opportunity for the group and my involvement is necessary, I'll do it. Yeah, I'll do it. In the case of Masked Singer, Mike and Barry pull me through. I trust them. They know my issues. When it came to the Variety Show, I said, well, this is not my bag. And I was told that I would be relied on for the comedy, for the sketch work. And all I had to perform were the opening and closing numbers. That turned out not to be the truth. But I look back on it now and I chuckle, you know, it's cathartic. And perhaps I've got a psychological issue that I need to learn to get over. I'm not gifted at it, but I was probably no worse than Bob Reed at it, and he enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah, I can't believe he came back for it as well.
Isn't that interesting? It was just he didn't have to grade himself on music right. or variety performances. Where if it was straight up acting, that was something that he took very seriously, and this was sort of just like a lark for him. And perhaps I needed. Treat it the same way. But I, you know, it started so early for me and I was so uncomfortable with it that it's just left, what am I talking about? Being forced into music and not understanding it at all and not feeling at all good about being forced, you know.
Did you sometimes fake injury or illness to get out of the live performances?
No, I didn't fake it, but I do. I went through a long period of time, like over a course of a year, not being able to walk. You know, my back would go out and there was no reason for it. I completely have forgotten about that, but I would like lock up if we were doing a variety performance or like on Merv Griffin or one of the variety programs as a guest, and I have to lay on the floor.
So that wasn't psychosomatic. You don't think that was real?
It was psychotrauma. Yeah. Looking back on it.
Barry, those albums that I've listened to a lot in the last couple of weeks, the production, the music production is incredible. And your producer, Jackie Mills, he wrote some of the songs. He produced those albums. What do you think about them looking back now?
Well, I think they've been greatly underrated. We had access to some of the finest talent of the day. They're both by Jackie Mills as our producer, the Baylor Brothers as backup singers. There were four singers there who they were the voice of not just our show, but Love American Style and the Partridge Family. They were doing backups for the Beach Boys, and they were kind of the session singers for so many, many different sounds. Those are the people that were writing our music. We did a lot of covers, but those are the people that were playing on our tracks, the singers that were singing on our tracks. And it was, I thought, a really wonderful, wonderful experience to get to do. And the result is the result. I mean, we were Brady Bunch kids, and you know, we weren't breaking any barriers, but I think it was wholesome and you know, pleasant enough and sing along.
You actually went out on the road, though. You know, there's that line in the theme song, this group must somehow form a family. I always thought it was far more likely that the family would somehow form a group.
Never thought of that. That's good. Yeah, good.
You can
catch.
Use that on the podcast. But yeah, you went out on the road.
First live performance we did was at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas with Ed Sullivan, no less, and a host of celebrities. We did Fair Dates. We were in Atlantic City, a very famous place there called the Estill Pier, and played there. Tony Orlando of Dawn opened for us. and we had a great experience. Now, that experience was as much about being there live and being choreographed and changing costumes and all of the, you know, the fun and things that live entertainment can, you know, lights and can bring to it, as well as the band. So that was as much a show as it was musical.
One of the things about the Brady Bunch, it seems to me, and Chris Knight and Barry Williams are our guests this morning, you did seem to be a family. What kind of bonding did the actors go through, if any, before the show began or during the seasons or between seasons?
Well, famously, we had never met each other before we started filming. We were meeting the first time on the set after we had been cast. We were already a family, so we were just getting to know each other. One of the reasons I'm so partial toward our first episode, which is about getting to know each other. So there was no bonding process in that sense, and the bonding came through the work, and also we spent not just a lot of time working together, but also schooling together, you know, for hours and hours a day. And so that was, you know, how we got to know each other and each other's families.
You know, and most of the work that you do as an actor, unless you're fortunate enough to do something like the Brady Bunch, which lasts forever, is like our pilot, or would have been like our pilot, which at the end of, I didn't know really anyone. I'd met 8 acquaintances and worked a number of hours with them, but didn't know them at all and wouldn't, if it wasn't for the fact that we got picked up and then had to, you know, shared 5 years of production and then a lifetime afterward in each other's orbit. And that's acting. And that's the job of acting. You meet a lot of people, you become very close very quickly, and then move on. That's what's so special about this group. It is not just, Barry's just not another actor that I have worked with. He's a brother.
The HGTV, it became a series. It was going to be a one episode special. It became 6. When they remodeled the picture of the house and made the interior look like our soundstage, was we were doing a series. We'd all come together and reunited, but not as our characters. We were ourselves. It wasn't, you know, Greg and Peter, Brady and Marsha, Jan and Cindy showing up. It was us as people. Now reflecting on the nostalgia of the show and helping, literally helping, picking up the hammer and helping, you know, remodel the house to look just as it did in the professional space that we grew up in.
That is a really remarkable show. Chris, you've had a bit of a design career as well. What did it mean to you to be part of that series where you took the house, which was only ever seen in establishing shots, and then made the interior look like the set of the show? What did it mean to you?
Well, there are a number of levels going on here. Like, first is that the whole purpose behind the show that became clear to us is that our audience had lost track of who we were and how we were, and that that house wasn't the Brady house, nor were we a family. And it's almost a testament to where we have landed over the years in the consciousness of our audience, wherein they think of us as a family. This house, similarly, was not the Brady house. It's just the house that they used for what they call the establishing shot. When you're coming back to the Brady house in the morning, and you know, you see the house from the outside and you know you're back in the Brady home. Or if you come there at night, you know it's nighttime in the Brady home. It's a common convention used in storytelling, in film and television. It just happened to be a photo of a house that, as I understand from Lloyd, that Sherwood found, that could conceivably be the exterior of the house that the Bradys lived in. Now, what house did the Bradys live in? Well, we never saw it. We just saw the interior of it. And we knew that the car drove up a driveway sort of to the left of the home. So that was a criteria. And then what house he picked is a one-story split-level home. So when this thing got started, maybe because I have had some building experience, but mind you, interestingly, every single Brady has had home remodeling and building experience. But maybe because I'm just a doubting Thomas, I said, it couldn't be done. There's no way. There's so much volume in that living room. And that staircase is so important. You can't not have it. So I don't know how you're going to make a two-story house, how you're going to fit a two-story house inside of a one-story structure, because the one thing you couldn't do is change the front elevation. That was known to America. So you couldn't bust out the roof and change the look of it from the street to fit in a second story. It couldn't be done. And I'm very glad that they proved me wrong.
The way that they did that, Chris probably didn't anticipate, is that they literally lowered the plot line. They dropped the lot by several inches to accommodate it and to put in a second story without changing the roof line from the front.
But what we ended up with is the creation of a home that really only existed in our imagination. And one of the defects of the set, if you will, the Brady home, although it was all contiguous, matter of fact, there's probably no more well-known interior television environment than the Brady home. And not just one environment. Every single room has a unique flair and is immediately recognizable. So to do it, we had to be faithful to that. And to the degree that we did that, we recreated what Barry and I grew up in. We all grew up in. The deficit of the set that we lived and worked in was when you opened the front door, there was no street out there. When you looked out the sliding glass doors, there was no glass in the sliding glass doors, and there was no sky, you know, outside, no sunlight coming in. When we finished
this house, there was no ceiling in the house.
And there was no ceiling. There was no fourth wall. When we finished this house, there was four walls, a ceiling, a roof, and windows with sky and light coming in from outside. So we recreated something that didn't exist and made it better than it was even originally.
With all the various variations of the Brady Bunch, why have we not seen a prequel? And that is, how did Mike and Carol meet? What happened to the first Mrs. Brady? And what happened to Carol's husband as well?
I immediately think that it's hard to do a prequel and have it have the same sort of sweet energy, because there must be something a little bit more sinister or dark that went down. You have a widower, and you have, and it's still to be decided, is it a widow or a divorcee in Carol? Because Barry will is better at explaining. Indecisiveness in the start on what Carol or how Carol is,
there was a lack of
history
agreement.
Is conveyed. So explain that, Bert.
Well, there's a lack of agreement. Sherwood Schwartz wrote it for a widower with three sons and a widow with three daughters. And the network, not wanting to offend the more conservative portions of our country here, felt that it would be offensive if that she were divorced.
It wasn't a widower and a widow. He wanted her to be a divorcee. And that was
correct.
The part that the network didn't agree on, right?
Part of that concern came from how were they going to deal with that? Where was the husband? What about parental rights? What about visitation? What about custodial? What happened? Why did they break up? And this was not about that, about those kinds of social issues that we deal with. This was about, very simply put, and this has really emerged very clearly to both Chris and me, the Brady Bunch, and as Sherwood has said, the Brady Bunch was basically, fundamentally, about people learning to get along. And so the network was shying away from the idea of her being a divorcee, so that the agreement was that they would not discuss it and never answer the question. It was answered, however, in the second movie, but that was unrelated enough to the Brady Bunch that...
Just on that second movie, I find one of the most amazing things is that the two actors who played Carol's husbands, Gary Cole and Tim Matheson, were Jed Bartlett's vice presidents on the West Wing. Now, whether that's a coincidence or not, I don't know, but that is...
No, West Wing, I don't think it had been done when the movie... Was
no.
It was West subsequent?
Yeah.
To the movie?
I think so.
Okay. All subsequent, yeah.
It's amazing, yeah. Isn't it? How did your podcast come about? Why was it that you decided to do it?
I had this, I was approached by a friend who was a producer a number of years ago and thought that I should do a podcast. I didn't think I should, but they convinced me that I should. And what would it be about? It would be about whatever's running through my mind, which is rather dangerous. And I did a few episodes that were very rangy. They were rather long, meandering, useless is what they were for entertainment. And then after about three or four of those on things like Bigfoot, where is Bigfoot, on, you know, other individuals that I've met along the way, just whatever might have been interesting to me. Another individual who was brought in, who is now our producer, had become aware of this new genre podcast that was finding great success. And that was these episodic reviews of a television show. And that struck me. Well, then if it's about Brady, I'm not necessarily, I can't be the lead on this, but I know who could be the lead on this, as he's professed to be the expert on Brady. He wrote the book on it, and that's Barry. And it would be fun to do with Barry. If we were going to do something like that, I would need to do it in partnership, and the partner to have on it would be Barry. So we reached out to Barry, and Barry was thankfully a willing participant with the idea that we'll review these episodes, recognizing that we haven't, either of us, watched these episodes in years. And what became clear to me in watching or dealing with the HGTV program is our audience has a different recollection of the show than we do. Our recollection is of doing the show. You ask each of us what our favorite episode is, and we'll tell you it was Hawaii for the same reason. We got to go to Hawaii. But ask us which our favorite episode was based on content, and we give you a blank stare. And that was the purpose of the podcast.
And let me say that I'm very grateful, Chris, to you for reaching out. And one of the great things that has come out of it for both of us is that we have learned to appreciate our show from our fan base point of view. They've come to us with a life of experience watching our show and what was meaningful to them and what counted and what influenced them and what they were inspired by. And that's something that we couldn't grasp until we'd done this podcast and seen it as fans of it ourselves and seeing it freshly and seeing it for how it was assembled and put together and then delivered rather than just what it was like to film. And so that's given us a much better appreciation and understanding of our fan base and the people that come to us to share their experiences with us.
It makes it very clear to me that how unfairly we were actually treated by the markets that would review things like television shows back in the day as compared to today. It was as though we were reviewed as adult programming. No distinction between what we were doing and what Macbeth would have done.
It's 50 years since the Brady Bunch went off the air for the first time. Where do you think we'll be in another 50 years? Will people still be watching the show, and will people still be listening to the podcast?
Listening to the podcast, I'm not sure. Brady Bunch, probably. I think that it's a filter for all children. I mean, insofar as if it's still got color and it's still findable, kids would gravitate to it because their story is universal. All of our stories are about where do we fit. In the first place that we try to fit into is that of family.
And it's timeless. I think the messages and the experiences and the development and the situations that kids get into is very relatable. And if you have brothers and sisters, you can probably relate to at least one or another character in the show.
I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us on, Rob.
It's our pleasure.
Take care. Bye-bye.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.